Im Wald, eine Kulturgeschichte.
In the Forest, a Cultural History. The podcast for the exhibition of the same name as complement to the exhibition or for when you're out and about.
In dieser Episode.
Ja, der Gedanke war wirklich.
Yes, the idea was really to consign an area completely to itself, but at the same time also to explore how such an area develops when humans no longer intervene.
In dieser Episode geht es darum.
In this episode, we explain how the forest in the Engadin was clear-cut and how three men ensured that it regrew and became a wild forest and a national park.
Machen wir eine Zeitreise.
Let's travel back in time to the beginning of the 20th century.
Ja, es ist, wenn man sich das vorstellt, Anfang
yes,
des 20. Jahrhunderts.
Just imagine. At the beginning of the 20th century, this here was a poor area in the Engadin.
Das ist Hans Lotzer, Autor.
This is Hans Lotzer, author, photographer, head of communications at the Swiss National Park.
Der Name Ofenpass, der verrät es ja bereits. Die Wälder im Nationalpark wurden früher intensiv.
The name Ofenpass reveals that in the past, the forests in the national park were used intensively as a source of timber. Whole areas were cleared and exploited for mining, so that the smelting furnaces that gave the area its name could be operated. The timber was also used for charcoal burning and for the production of burnt lime, which was used for building.
Was sich hier zeigt im Gebiet zwischen Ofenpass, Zernetz.
What we see here in the area between the Ofenpass, Zernetz, Susch, down to Schall and Schwoll has a long history. It has a lot to do with poverty and with profit-seeking.
Es waren verschiedene Ereignisse, aber das Zentrale war schon die Berge.
One could name many events, but a key issue that shaped the area as long ago as the 16th century and the 17th century was mining. Afterwards, especially in the 19th century, timber kept on being sold to the salt mines in Hall in Tyrol. They required tremendous quantities of wood, and when the forests in Tyrol had been plundered, the entrepreneurs traveled up the Enn. They ended up in the Engadin and continued to exploit the forests there.
Und das Ergebnis ist erschreckend. Kahle, abgeholzte Berge.
And the result was frightening. Bare, deforested mountain slopes. No more game, no more lynxes, no more ibexes. The wolf, only a border crosser.
Ja, Wald hält natürlich auch die steilen.
Of course, there was also a lot of erosion, because the forest also reinforces the steep hillsides. And there were more avalanches because, in many places, the forests no longer offered protection.
Hans Lotzer. Heute würde man sagen, eine ökologische.
Today one would speak of an ecological disaster. An ecological disaster that was also happening elsewhere in the Alpine region and beyond. The forest in Switzerland was not doing well.
Geht es nicht gut. Es sind dann drei Persönlichkeiten.
It was then that three personalities decided to do something. Not only to reforest the area, they went one step further.
Ja, es gibt ja heute diesen modernen Begriff des Rewildings.
Today we have the modern term of rewilding. In a way, it's like trying to make former cultural sins go away by letting the wild grow back. Their plan was to create a national park.
Und der Nationalpark ist ja nichts anderes als ein Experiment.
And after all, a national park is nothing more than an experiment by leaving nature in one place in the Alps to completely run its natural course.
Um das Jahr 1909 in Zernetz.
Around the year 1909, the three men make their appearance in Zernetz at different times, all three of them with the wish to promote an idea among a poor local peasant population. To leave an area around the Ofenpass to itself, so that the forest and nature could recover.
Der erste, Johann
the first one, Johann Wilhelm Quartz, who grew up in Chur, trained as a forestry engineer and later became forestry inspector of the canton of Grison. In 1875, he was appointed chief federal forestry inspector and created the Swiss forestry law.
Ja, ich denke, war eine Person, die wirklich noch in
yes, I think he was a person whom we could place in the category of universal scholar. He actually found it difficult to study forestry at all, since in those days the subject as such did not exist. He then trained and worked as a surveyor, always on the move in these mountain regions where he saw how things were developing. That was exactly the critical time when this overexploitation was taking place. And this, of course, made him think.
Der zweite, Stevan Brunais, Botaniker, Gymnasial.
The second one, Stevan Brunais, botanist, high school teacher in Basel, native of the Engadin, and author of many books on the national park.
Sein Vater hat als Goldgräber in den Vereinigten Staaten.
His father had been a successful gold miner in the United States in Alaska. When he came back, he built a large house and was able to allow his son to study. At the time, that was a tremendous privilege. Brunais wrote his PhD on the botanical conditions of the Ofenpass. Of course, he was also kind of a patriot. For him, the Engadin was real home, a place he could truly identify with. He then went to Basel as a biology teacher and there came into contact with Paul Sarrazin and his entourage. And almost like an angel, he provided them with the idea of where such an area could be marked out, namely in his home region in the Engadin.
Der dritte, Paul Sarrazin, Vetter von Fritz Sarrazin.
The third man, Paul Sarrazin, cousin of Fritz Sarrazin, natural scientist, explorer in Ceylon and Celebes. Both descendants of a family that had made a fortune through cotton weaving and the silk ribbon industry. Paul Sarrazin was co-founder of the World Conservation Union. Paul Sarrazin and his cousin Fritz Sarrazin certainly played a central role in this because they come from this rich family in Basel and they were mavericks in the sense that they had studied ecology instead of economics. And yes, they had traveled to faraway countries, to distant Asia, where they had gained insight into how humans behaved in nature. Moreover, in view of the threat to nature, they had this vision, namely to withdraw a piece of Switzerland completely from human use and to preserve it for eternity. That was such an incredible idea, in actual fact, unrealizable, and a vision.
Quartz, Brunais, Sarrazin, die drei gründen den Schweizerischen Bund für Naturschutz, um zwischen
Quartz, Brunais und Sarrazin. The three of them founded the Swiss League for the Protection of Nature with the aim of doing something unique between the Ofenpass and Zernetz, leaving nature to run its natural course and watch with scientific scrutiny as the forest grows and goes wild, free of human influence. With the aid of lease payments to the affected communities, the support of the Parliament in Bern, and mobilization through the League for the Protection of Nature, all this was made possible. On the 1st of August 1914, the Swiss National Park was ceremoniously opened.
Dort, wo früher kahle Bergflanken standen, wachsen nun neue Wälder.
Where there used to be bare mountain flanks, new forests now grew. Pioneer forests, especially mountain pines. The seeds of mountain pines thrive well even on very poor soil. An important step had been taken for nature conservation, for forest protection in Switzerland. But not only that. I think at the beginning there was something that had been spreading since the 18th century, and which was closely linked with the Enlightenment, a growing interest in nature. Patrick Kuppo, historian at the University of Innsbruck and the author of Creating Wilderness, a transnational history of the Swiss National Park. We see interests of a very different kind. There was a growing scientific interest, but also a political interest, an economic interest, an aesthetic interest, as well as a romantic interest in nature. And these interests began to merge in manifold ways. And they developed in the 18th century along with the Enlightenment and then diffused into broader bourgeois strata in the 19th century. These bourgeois strata were the backbone of a new view of nature.
Dieses Interesse verknüpft sich dann zunehmend mit Beobachtungen.
This interest then became increasingly linked to observations that nature was threatened, that it was disappearing. Here we are approaching the turn from the 19th to the 20th century, when such voices began to find more acceptance and also began to organize themselves. In this context, Paul Sarrazin was a very important figure, not only for Switzerland, but also globally, in the sense that he began to bundle and coordinate such interests and views.
Ein Einstehen für die Natur, die im Fall des Schweizerischen
National- Standing up for nature. In this case, for the Swiss National Park, and the idea of letting the forest and nature run wild was not really comprehensible to the local people.
Die verstanden das auch gar nicht, weil für die war das ein Lebensraum. So ein Raum,
they didn't understand it at all, because for them the forests and the mountains were a living environment, a habitat, a space they used in many different ways. The forests were used as a source of timber for gathering and for hunting, and now this was all to be stopped, and there was nothing left to do there.
Tatsächlich verbirgt sich hinter der Idee des Nationalparks nicht nur der
In fact, concealed behind the national park idea lay not only the idea of nature conservation and forest protection, but also plenty of evolutionary theory. More precisely, the idea that humanity should be separated into so-called races at different stages of development, and that it was a matter of preserving so-called primitive peoples in their natural state in order to be able to observe them with scientific precision. Paul and Fritz Sarrazin in particular advocated the idea of isolating and shielding these so-called primitive peoples.
Indem sie für die Reservate schaffen wollten, die von außen...
By creating reservations which could only be entered by selected persons. These were, of course, the scientists themselves, while at the same time the people were forbidden to leave these reservations. They were to be kept there unchanged, in their pristine way of life, so to speak. The same concept was applied to nature here. It was to be left entirely to itself, but closely observed.
Selbst überlässt und dabei beobachtet
und zuschaut, wie sie sich entwickelt. Im Nationalpark
Thus, at the core of the idea of a Swiss national park, we also find the reservation concept, revealing a tinge of colonial thinking, says the historian Patrick Kuppel.
Diese koloniale Reservatsperspektive fließt ein in den Schweizerischen Nationalpark. Und auch in andere
This colonial reservation perspective flows into the Swiss National Park and like institutions in Europe and the USA. What was seen as wild nature was very strongly influenced by images that stemmed from colonial regions and places like the west of the USA. In other words, from areas that were imagined to be hardly used, and if so, by people who themselves still lived in a state of naturel.
Und das bedeutet,
and that means,
hier imaginierte man sich jetzt eben Naturlandschaften, urtümliche
Here one imagined natural landscapes, primeval natural landscapes, possibly still populated by primeval people, or not. If they no longer behaved like primitives, then they had to be driven out, or at least the way the area was used had to be stopped.
Aber was ist denn nun die Bedeutung des Nationalparks mit seinen
But what is the significance of the national park with its rewilded forests for forest research and forest use in Switzerland as a whole?
Erstaunlicherweise ist die
Surprisingly, the ramifications were quite minor at the start.
Patrick
Kuppel, the historian.
Denn
Because at first
ist der Forstverein selber ja nicht an der
The Swiss Forestry Association itself was not involved in the establishment of the national park. All they did was to create a few nature reserves, albeit small nature reserves, but this current within the Forestry Association is negligible. And these initiatives do not continue initially. It is only in the 1960s that they begin to resurge.
Und es ist nicht so, dass die Erkenntnisse aus den Beobachtungen im Nationalpark
Nor do findings from observations in the national park flow directly into the forest research and forest use in other parts of Switzerland.
Wir sehen auch im Nationalpark, obwohl ganz viel des Fläche ist Wald, setzt die Waldforschung erst verzögert ein. Das heißt, es gibt hier eine verzögerte
With regard to the national park, although a great deal of this area is forest, we notice that field research only begins with a delay. In other words, there is a delayed effect here. Nonetheless, I think that it is important because now we have large forest areas under observation for many decades, which means the observation series are much longer than in other areas, thus providing important insights especially on the question of natural succession, mainly with regard to the question of how forests develop and what the natural composition of forests look like, especially in the case of an alpine forest. That can be researched here with a much better database. So let us return to Johann Wilhelm Quatz, then the federal forestry inspector, who, by the way, remained in office until the ripe old age of over 90. Just imagine that today.
Hans Lotzer vom Schweizerischen.
Hans Lotzer from the Swiss National Park.
Und er hatte sich wohl zum Ziel.
He probably set himself the goal of not retiring until the Swiss National Park had been set up. And that's exactly what he did. As soon as the park had been established, he resigned. It was obviously a matter of concern to him to be able to protect an area in this way and also to show how such an area develops when man does not intervene. That was really an example that could perhaps be used as a model in other areas.
Aber wie ist das? Wie lesen, wie
But how is it today? How do visitors read, understand and experience this wild forest today?
Ja, das gibt dann spektakuläre Waldbilder, wo man fast mehr tote als lebendige Bäume sieht.
The wilderness of the place creates spectacular images in which you almost see more dead trees than living ones. And when you ask people, they say, yes, this forest dieback is really a sore sight. But in fact, it has nothing to do with forest dieback. It is simply a matter of generational change. But because practically all the trees are of about the same age, it is something you notice straight away. Perhaps it is also all too human to look at a cemetery rather than a kindergarten. But nurseries do exist here. When you look at the ground, you see many young trees in growth, not only mountain pines, but also many others. And we are in the middle of a generational change, and for Swiss people, a forest left to run its own natural course is certainly quite unusual.
Ein wilder, urtümlicher Wald, der vielleicht
a wild primeval forest that perhaps has an inspiring effect.
Ich denke schon, das ist vermutlich auch eines der großen Probleme.
Yes, probably. I believe one of the big problems we have in Switzerland today is that we like to have everything neat and tidy, so that we're presently facing a real biodiversity crisis. I hope that one day we'll see a generation that is vigorously prepared to stand up for wilder forests, because that is what we urgently need.
Im Wald, eine Kulturgeschichte.
In the forest, a cultural history. This episode was about the importance of the Swiss National Park for the protection of forests in Switzerland in general. With Hans Lotzer, communications manager at the Swiss National Park, and Patrick Kupo, historian and professor of economic and social history at the University of Innsbruck, and with the voices of Christoph Keller and Sam Amon. This podcast is available in and beyond the exhibition on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever good podcasts are obtainable, as well as on the website of the Swiss National Museum. The podcast, In the Forest, a Cultural History, is a production of Podcast Lab, www.podcastlab.ch.